vacation or their working time or etc. So
let's address to the practice of having separate train compartments for women and men. It's not only the Islamic countries. You could also see this practice in Korea.
And exactly. I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah. And recently, a reporter was saying, he was asked why you are having the separate, segregation of men and women. And he was like, we're not like you. We don't want our women to get harassed. We don't want our women to get exposed to abusive behavior.
Exactly.
So, you know, even the non-Muslim societies understand this. The introduction of women-only carriages was primarily aimed at ensuring safety and well-being of women in their daily commutes. You know, it's not because the harassment, the uncomfortable experiences for women are becoming so common on public transportation. I know that coming from that society wherein we had public transportation where both genders were mixed up, you can't even travel. You can, like, I plan to buy my own personal vehicle rather than traveling in the public transportation,
exactly,
which was mixed. And it took me a lot because not everyone around can buy a private transport.
Can afford that, yeah.
Yeah, it's actually the responsibility of the society to create a segregated compartment so that women can feel, you know, comfortable. They don't have those
and
uncomfortable experiences.
And you know what? It's the matter of humanity. Even if we forget about religion, it's the matter of humanity. There is a woman and there is a man. If you put them together, there might be too much of dramas and problems. So she wants to study. She wants to fulfill her dreams. She wants to be someone for herself. But then the outside world, as we said, is a dangerous place. And there are some people who do not understand the dreams of this delicate creature. So she must be protected.
Right. Actually, you are providing her a safer environment by segregating.
Exactly.
You are providing her
with peace of mind, with comfort.
That comfort that you are reducing the risk of a harassment.
Exactly.
You are actually taking a proactive measure to protect her and ensure that she feels secure while using public transportation when it comes to trains. So now, when it comes to segregation of schools by gender, it's often misunderstood again because it's not about prioritizing one gender over the other. Most of the times it's thought so.
Welcome back. Here again, we interrupt the normal course of our program to go live to Press TV headquarters, where our colleagues actually are covering the latest developments in Palestine. Let's take a listen.
Forces. And today, again, it all started from the very beginning of the day. And again, as you see behind me, smoke is yet there. Al Manara military base in Kiryat Shmona of the occupied lands of Palestine has been targeted by resistance and tensions on Gili Mali, specifically after the massacre that took place in Al Mamdani hospital in Gaza. And the sentiments are really high here. And as I reported in previous days as well, every day there are series of confrontations. The total number of the Hezbollah fighters in these encounters are almost 13 based on the latest reports released by Hezbollah officially. And dozens of the Israeli armies have also been targeted by Hezbollah, but yet not confirmed, because the Zionists are not confirming about their casualties. This is the unknown situation, and we are also waiting to get updates.
Okay. Mick Napier in Edinburgh. Let's talk about the issue of accountability, an issue that we've spoken here on Press TV many times in the past. There has to be serious consequences for the actions being carried out by the Israelis, for killing children, targeting schools, targeting medical facilities, ignoring international treaties and international law. What can you tell us about these consequences, whether there will be any accountability for the Israelis, and how that avenue should be pursued?
Well, I mean, there must be accountability, but to whom? It raises the question of agency. Who will discipline Israel? If you look at the United Nations, they publish report after report finding that Israel is guilty of war crimes and and crimes against humanity. But there's no pressure from the UN. Israel only responds to force. It does not respond to any moral argument. They have come to conquer Palestine, and they don't want Palestinians. And that can only be achieved by massive violence, criminality of all sorts. Look, and if you look at the governments in the EU, they have declared for a very long time that the public opinion in the EU will not influence their policy. In fact, they made a mistake, a small technical mistake on one occasion many years ago, and they conducted an opinion poll among EU countries concerning Israel. The results they got back from their point of view were horrifying. A majority of people in every country in the EU was of the opinion that Israel was a serious, if not the most serious, threat to world peace. But their spokesperson, Franco Frattini, apologized to Israel for the opinions of Europeans and promised the Israelis that these opinions would not influence EU policy. So there's no help for the Palestinians coming from the elites in these areas. But just like in the Middle East, although it's at a lower temperature, it's still very hot. Public opinion is hostile to Israel in Europe and across virtually the whole world. That's where the accountability has to come from resistance across the Middle East. Because take, for example, the International Criminal Court. There's an arrest warrant issued for Vladimir Putin, the Russian leader. It took about a year or so of war before that arrest warrant to be issued. Israel has been committing massacres of civilians for 75 years. Not only that, the people who carry out the massacres boast about it in Israel, and they become sometimes prime minister. Israel has massacred Egyptian prisoners of war, has massacred Egyptian civilian workers when they invaded Sinai in past occasions. And they talk about it openly in the Israeli press. And the officers who did it are completely unrepentant. So this is so open. But the ICC, I could give them the information. There's so many bodies could give them a compelling case for war crimes, not against one general in Israel, but hundreds of generals and prime ministers. And they haven't acted. They talk about opening an inquiry, but the ICC, super quick to move against Russia, have given Israel a free card. They have joined the international awarding of a green light to Israel in order to carry out terrible massacres. The only accountability will come from popular resistance in all its forms around the Middle East and around the world.
Farshid Baghdian, the Russian foreign minister just recently has warned that there is a serious risk that the Gaza conflict will become regional. I want you to break down the comments from the Russian foreign minister. Earlier in the war, in the onslaught that the Israelis launched on the people of Gaza, the Russian foreign minister also weighed in and said that what's happening right now is due to the failed policy of the likes of the United States in the West Asia region. Mr. Baghdian. All right, I believe we do not have Mr. Baghdian right now. I can readdress that question to Mr. Napier. Hopefully he's still with us from Edinburgh. Mr. Napier, if you're with us, give us your thoughts on the recent comments coming from Russian officials, one from the Russian President Vladimir Putin blaming the violence that's happening in West Asia region on the failed policies of the United States, and also recently the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has warned that there is a serious risk, basically, that the Gaza conflict will become regional.
Well, there's a growing awareness across the Middle East that this is not a Palestinian issue. The Palestinians are in the front line, defending with their blood, not just Palestine, but Israeli ambitions across the wider region. Israel was not very heavily financed by the USA before 1967. If you look at the data of USA to Israel, before 1967, perhaps when the Zionist project was weaker, perhaps the Zionist project was more vulnerable, American aid was pretty modest. France and Britain were important donors. But after 1967, after the Israeli army defeated Egypt, Syria, and Jordan, and proved to America that it could be a valuable attack dog in the region against any regime that America disapproved of, that's when the aid from America went through the roof. Massive military and civil aid. It simply highlights the point. America doesn't care about the citizens of Israel. It cares about having an attack dog in the region. Now, the problem with an attack dog is it can be defeated. But before we talk about the possibility of it being defeated, the Palestinian Authority has been used by Israel to police Palestinians, and it will be cast aside, by the Israelis if they decide to occupy the entire West Bank. There is already open talk in Israel among certain, extreme right wing sections of the population and leaders that they don't need the Jordanian king any longer, and there's open discussion in certain areas of allowing him to fall, of driving Palestinians out of Palestine into Jordan. So the Israeli appetite for land and control, there's no reason why it will stop at the borders of Palestine. They openly talk about a Israeli empire. So the Palestinians are defending the people of the entire region with their blood. And it's important for people further afield in the Middle East to realize they are not just supporting the Palestinians when they do support them. They are defending themselves in the future. Because if this barbaric regime, and think about this, if they can bomb a hospital and kill 500 men, women, and children, mainly women and children, without any compunction, without any apology, without any hesitation, these people have 200 nuclear weapons. And can we allow 200 nuclear weapons to remain under the control of such a barbaric government? So there's a danger for the entire people of the Middle East. The risk of war is real because people are aware of this, that they need to come to the aid of the Palestinians in order to defend themselves and prevent much bigger and much more dangerous wars in the future. So yes, I think there's a very large danger of this spreading to involve the neighboring countries and perhaps countries in Islam and Muslim countries further afield. It is truly inspiring to see Yemeni fighters demanding to be allowed to march towards Palestine. Right. We need more of that.
Okay, Mr. Napier, let's bring in Mr. Baghdadian again on the line with us from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Mr. Baghdadian, we lost you earlier there. Please give us your perspective on the issue we were just discussing with Mr. Napier. That's coming from the Russian foreign minister, who has warned that there is a serious risk that the Gaza conflict will become regional. Mr. Napier also expressed his concerns about the vicious nature of the Israeli regime.
Yeah, thank you very much. Remember the Mr. Putin statement that told America that your nave, your warship is over there. This is a very important thing. It means that the warship is not there for rescuing the people, the innocent people of Gaza. No. This is the balance of power. What is happening in the Middle East is the balancing of power between the United States and the rest of the world. For example, China and Russia and rising powers like Iran. For this reason, the United States over there not helping Israel, not helping victims of Gaza. The United States is with Israel just to balance power and making threat for the world, because they cannot make this power. Just making threat. I believe that they are pushing on China to make a statement what is happening over there, and they are pushing on the rest of the world to pressing the Muslim world, the Muslim unity. And they are trying to spoiling the Muslim unity against this. Israel is losing its reputation because this is the regime. This is not state, it's not government, it's the regime. Losing reputation, losing his tie, and losing all kind of the connections, even with the Latin America. Look at the Arab world. One by one, they're trying away from Israel because they consider that this is a disease, and make it and maybe the influence of this disease will spread over all around the world, especially in the Middle East. And in my as a statement, Israel is not stopping the war, and ground assault will begin soon because the occupation would not be stopped. The people of Gaza, they want their land back, nothing else, nothing more. And they are making collective punishment. And the collective punishment means ruining, destroying the Gaza itself, and deurbanization of Gaza, and displacement of the population of Gaza to other countries, especially to Egypt, to Jordan, to Syria, many other places. Why? Because they want to bring and they want to dedicate the cows to the other countries. This is the plan for Israel. And the United States is supporting this plan. Why? What? Because they want to spoil the benefits, the interests of Iran, of China, and Russia, and the East totally in the Middle East. This is the fact. East is looking at the East. And the United States and its supporters cannot stand in this region. The total fact is that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bahrania. That was political analyst Farshi Bahrania joining us from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Let's bring in once again Mr. Napier from Edinburgh. Mr. Napier, following what took place on October the 7th, the Al-Aqsa storm operation carried out by the Gaza-based resistance movements, many experts have pointed out to exposing of a serious flaw in the Israeli intelligence and security apparatus. Give us your thoughts on that, but also on the same side of that, the different side, basically, of the same coin would be the enhanced capabilities of the resistance forces. Elaborate on that for us as well, and whether you think that, given what we've seen, the Israelis now should start to feel less and less secure.
For sure. The Israelis are the victim of their own hubris, their own arrogance, their own contempt for the Palestinians. And we've seen many examples in colonial history where Europeans come to dispossess the natives and to take their land or to pillage their resources with nothing but contempt for these inferior people, they think. And they have got a terrible shock. They've been defeated. And they've been defeated in an asymmetric warfare by an opponent that cannot possibly have the same military power as they do, but has a certain intelligence and perceptiveness that they lack. I mean, look at the record. The Palestinian resistance punched its way out of the cage, out of the Gaza concentration camp, and carried all before it. The Israeli army had reduced their forces there out of contempt for the Palestinians. They thought that they had them completely under control. They were sure they had 100% control. Electronic fences, robotic guns, automatic heavy machine guns that can be fired from an office in Tel Aviv. And they thought that the Palestinians had been reduced to what a previous general, General Eitan, had said, we will reduce the Palestinians to drugged cockroaches in a bottle. Well, they weren't cockroaches, and the bottle wasn't strong enough, because the Israelis had treated them with contempt, but they observed the Israelis accurately, sharply, and rather brilliantly. Because I don't think ever in the history of asymmetric warfare, and there are many wonderful examples, I don't think we've seen an example of such an enormous difference in military power between the two sides, and the weaker side prevailing through intelligence, daring, courage, etc. So yes, it's quite remarkable. And it will be discussed in military staff colleges around the world for a very, very long time indeed. But look, America and Britain have been able to crush colonial opponents. Across America, we see a trail of extermination and genocide. It's American. That's the history of America, extermination. And we see a Britain able to do this as well in Tasmania, Newfoundland, elsewhere. But the problem is, it's completely different in the Middle East. The peoples who were defeated by European colonists, they were defeated by force of numbers. They said they could defeat the Europeans time after time after time, but they kept on coming in huge numbers. They were like leaves on the tree, said one North American resistor. But that's not the case in the Middle East. There are 7 million Zionist Jews, maybe fewer. Quite a lot of Orthodox Jews are not Zionist. There may be 7 million Zionist Jews, 7 million Palestinians and others inside Palestine. But they're surrounded by hundreds of millions of Arabs who can turn on their TV and see a regime killing people because they are Arabs. And the Arab rulers who've made their peace with Israel have to sit on that fire. This is the reality. And it burns deep into the psychology of people across the region. Israel is a monstrous entity which lives by blood and fire and killing and full spectrum criminality. If anyone thinks my language is exaggerated, look at the record. Israel's the first to introduce biological weapons, warfare into the region. Air piracy. Israel's the first power in the region to kidnap the airliners and force them to the ground. If you look at what Israel has done, in order to crush the Palestinians and intimidate its neighbors, because these two things must go together. When you try to crush the Palestinians, you arouse the anger of local populations, and therefore you must be ready for war as well. So yes, Israel means war. It has always meant war. But remember, although they crushed the opposition in 67, in 73 it was close. The Egyptian army, the soldiers of the Egyptian army, delivered a stinging defeat on Israel. And although it ended up in a draw for Israel, they were traumatized by the possibility of defeat.
Okay.
In 2006, I was going to just mention other situations where Israel has been defeated.
Thank you, Mr. Napier. We're going to cross over now to the Iranian capital, Tehran, a demonstration in support of the Palestinians is taking place outside the United Nations office in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Our correspondent, Gisu Mishahmadi, is joining us now from the venue of the rally with more. Gisu.
We've been witnessing huge crowds gathering at Tehran's Palestine Square. Now I'm right across from the UN headquarters in Tehran, the office in Tehran, where, as you can see, huge crowds of women and children are here chanting slogans in support of Palestinians and their fight for freedom. We have women who are here with their children. With them, they are condemning the atrocities that the Israeli Zionist regime has committed against the women and children in particular. They are also condemning the fact that the Zionist regime blatantly has been targeting healthcare centers and hospitals with no consideration whatsoever of the Geneva Convention. And, of course, as you can see, they are also expressing their willingness to offer any kind of support to the people who are in Gaza. Even some of them are suggesting that they are ready to come to Gaza to offer their help for the people who are fighting for their freedom. And, of course, now this is the first time over the past couple of days that we have such a gathering in front of the UN headquarters in Tehran. They're hoping that the UN will at least listen to these voices as they are calling for UN support for Palestinians, the oppressed Palestinian nation. And this is the only thing that they would expect the United Nations to do, to write at the right stand, to stand at the right side of the story and offer its support to the oppressed and not the oppressor. One of the interesting slogans, Bardia, that I heard here was UN is not, is just a name. So they are also suggesting that if the UN doesn't do anything at this point in history, it means that all the UN stands for is just a facade, and it is not truly the representative of United Nations and nations from across the world, but it is simply representing the world powers. Back to you, Badia.
Thank you, Gisu Prestige, Gisu Misha Ahmadi, joining us from a rally taking place outside the United Nations office in the Iranian capital, Tehran. We're going to continue with our coverage of the war on Gaza. These are the live latest live images that we're getting from the Gaza skyline in what appears to be the continuation of the Israeli onslaught on the besieged coastal Palestinian territory. Fra Hughes, journalist, author, and activist, joins us now from Belfast to offer us more insight on what's taking place right now. Mr. Hughes, welcome to the program. Give us your perspective on how events have transpired over the past few days, specifically when we're reviewing the attack that took place on the Gaza hospital in central Gaza, the Al-Ahli hospital.
I think it's further proof, and proof were needed, that the Zionist regime, the army, the air force, and the navy that is carpet bombing Gaza is absolutely devoid of humanity. If it's true that the IDF tweeted out on their, or actually on their Facebook page, that they were bringing euthanasia to the hospital as it had run out of other services, I think it speaks volumes of the dehumanization of the Palestinian people, that they can be treated as cattle, they can be treated as beasts walking on two legs, and they can be treated as being subhuman. And we've seen all this before in the history of the world. We've seen this from fascist, supremacist, racist regimes. We can go back to Africa and we can see what King Leopold III did in the Congo. We can see what the British have done all over Africa. We can see what the Spanish have done all over South America. We can now witness what the Americans are doing all over West Asia, Vietnam, Cambodia, and all the other countries, Grenada, Haiti, that they have targeted and invaded and basically had no respect for human life. So the bombing of the hospital is just further proof, as I said, if it was needed, of the total lack of value for human life, lack of compassion, and actually, you know, the celebration of the murdering of maybe 500 women and children, and those still caught and buried and quite possibly dead under the rubble. It's unconscionable what they're doing, and the fact that Rishi Sunak, the British Prime Minister, is now in Tel Aviv alongside Biden, who was there yesterday, to show unquavering support for this supremacist racist regime, just shows you how Israel is now following in the colonial footsteps of both the Americans and the British, and indeed the EU, with its total disregard for the lives of the other, and they're only concerned about their own lives, about their own supremacist values, and about their own religious and political Zionist ideology.
John Bosnich is joining us now, journalist, activist, and political analyst from Belgrade. Mr. Bosnich, welcome to the program. As we do with all of our guests, I want to get your overall perspective of how events have transpired over the past few days as the Israelis continue their indiscriminate attacks on the defenseless people of Gaza. And, of course, let's not forget the hospital in central Gaza that was targeted on Tuesday.
Well, I think there is no debate about whether or not war crimes are being committed. There's a plethora of international monitors reporting indiscriminate attacks on civilian targets. There is actual footage from the scene, from both from the Israeli side and from the Palestinian side, describing and showing these activities taking place. So I don't think there's any more debate about whether war crimes are being conducted in this offensive. That's clear. And there's also no doubt, especially now as it progresses, that the war crimes being committed by Israel are disproportionate and indiscriminate. That means that they exceed the damage done by the other side in terms of lives and material destruction, and at the same time, they exceed the number of non-targeted individuals. We're talking about tens of thousands and now hundreds of thousands of targeted individuals who are being affected by these attacks. This is an escalation of the violence and an escalation of the war crimes.
Fra Hughes, as we're speaking to our guests, these are also live images that we're getting from Gaza as the Israeli attacks continue. Black plumes, or rather thick plumes of smoke, are rising through the air, which are showing that the Israeli aerial onslaught continues as we speak. Mr. Hughes, what do you make of this international support that we've been seeing in hundreds of cities around the world denouncing the Israeli attacks, rallying in support of the Palestinians? Do you think that there is an increased level of global awareness now for the Palestinian cause?
I do. Anyone who's been following what's been happening in Gaza from the siege from 2007, when Hamas was democratically elected as the spokespersons for the Palestinian people, because it's never suited Britain, it never suited America, it never suited Israel. We all wanted Abbas and all wanted the PA to become their preferred collaborators within the Palestinian people and political institutions. So we have seen an awakening across the world as to what's happening. I put it down to social media. I put it down to the fact that people can Google what is happening and find Press TV. They can find No De Niro. They can find George Galloway. They can find lots of alternative truth speakers who are telling things as they are. We do not have an agenda other than telling the truth. I think more and more people, especially young Jewish Americans, are waking up to the realization that their dream of a land to protect the Jewish people does not exist. Not because that land cannot be protected, but because every violation upon Palestinian civilians must go to the very soul of Israeli society. The damage that they are doing to themselves, while nowhere near on par with the murderous campaign that they are inflicting upon the people of Gaza, it is a darkening of the soul of Israeli society. The fact that breaking the silence in groups come forward to explain to the world the ongoing violations and human rights abuses and cold-blooded murder and execution of unarmed Palestinians in the West Bank proves that the damage that is being done, the brainwashing that is actually being done in Israel, is having such a huge psychological harmful effect on those people, because adults can only demonize and dehumanize other people if they have been brainwashed from children to believe that these other people have no rights, to believe that these other people are out to murder you. How many times have we heard people say they'll rape our children, they'll rape the women, they'll murder the old people, and Palestinians are terrorists, when indeed Palestinians are freedom fighters trying to free their land, trying to protect their homes, and they are not guilty of any of the crimes that the West and Israel and the propagandists are trying to convince us all that the Palestinian resistance and indeed the axis of resistance in the region are capable of.
John Bosnich, a lot of experts have been pointing out this serious flaw that was exposed in the Israeli intelligence and security apparatus. What do you think in that regard?
Well, I think there's no system that is immune to defeat. That means that it was inevitable that at some point the people in Gaza and the Hamas organization would find a way to break through the wall that encloses them in what has been called an a literal concentration camp. The population of Palestinians has been concentrated into a camp in which they are not allowed to leave or enter freely. That's the definition of a concentration camp. I think the world knows this definition now, and I think that they're familiar, especially through the mainstream media and what's called normally called the lying mainstream media. It's very, very hard to lie about this subject when there's so much video and there's so much photography being made from all sides about what's taking place. The lying mainstream media can no longer pull the wool over the eyes of the world. Now, as the world wakes up to the reality that has not been on the screens, what is happening is that Hamas is receiving an approval from the public of the world, and it's a passive approval because they're watching what they did. They're receiving an approval from many people around the world who say they had no other choice. That doesn't mean that there has been a moral decision that has been correctly made by either side here, but all normal, civilized, peaceful, legal avenues of complaint were sealed, were impossible to pursue. And that means that a small minority, a more extreme minority than the majority, will always attempt to take action. And there are people around the world who are saying that under occupation, any tactic is legal. Now, these debates have brought the entire subject to the worldview. And as we can see around the world, Israel has lost sympathy. The sympathy that came as a result of the Holocaust is evaporating. And many Jewish survivors of the Holocaust around the world are speaking out against Israel, and this is virtually unprecedented. So this is not only a military, psychological, and intelligence defeat for Israel. It's also becoming a massive moral defeat for Israel. I'm a Christian, and I can tell you that having grown up in a Judeo-Christian society in which the two religions were put together very often in our society, there is now growing a very, very deep split between Jews and Christians because Christians cannot countenance the wanton killing of civilians by either side, and especially not by a recognized international state with countries free normal diplomatic and political relations. This has gone beyond the pale. Israel has broken its trust with Jews around the world, with Christians around the world, and naturally with Muslims and people of other faiths. We are seeing a cataclysmic decline in the status of Israel globally, and it's of Israel's own doing. This decline of support for Israel will destroy Israel International, threaten the existence of the Israeli state. There's no way to deny this.
Frahues, the capabilities of the resistance forces, how improved at that it has become was on display as a result of the Operation Al-Aqsa Storm. Should the Israelis start to feel less and less secure now?
Yes, I think that's quite obvious when we've seen all the people trying to flee from Ben Gurion Airport in Tel Aviv. While they carpet bomb Gaza, these carpet baggers that have dual citizenship who can return to Russia, France, America, Britain, Canada, Australia, Belgium, wherever it is that they have moved from in order to occupy the homes and the lands of Palestinians and steal their natural resources. Those people are trying to flee. I think that with the drone technology and the missile technology that Hamas and the resistance groups in Gaza appear to have acquired, has given a more partial level fighting field for all those involved. And I feel very strongly that drones are now really the balance in wars. If they send in 100 tanks into Gaza, if the Gazans have 100 drones, you know, they could lose 100 Merkava tanks very quickly. But I'd just like to comment just on the question that you posed to John there, just for 1 second. It struck me as John was speaking that before we had alternative media and social media and social networks, if we go back to the times when it was the priests who were the only people who could read, and they directed people from the pulpit, and they were the educated people who, in my view, would have brainwashed the masses. Then we had the printing presses, and that gave the whole of humanity an opportunity to read, to learn about the world as it was. Perhaps we should be viewing the alternative media as the new printed media against mainstream media itself. The fact that we now have a digital printing press to allow the world to take the time to suss out other alternative media organizations to find out what's happening. I think this is a Rubicon that has been crossed, and that is why so many tens of millions of people around the world are waking up to the Israeli Zionist atrocities.
So we have live images from Gaza right now on the top right-hand side of your screen. We were just displaying for our viewers as the indiscriminate Israeli attacks continue against the besieged Gaza Strip. The Gaza skyline is showing that, first of all, you can see the scope of destruction that the Israelis have inflicted on the residential areas and critical infrastructure in Gaza. A humanitarian catastrophe is unfolding. Their dire conditions are contributing to this catastrophe, and yet the international community sits idly by. When we're talking about the international community, Mr. Bosnich, we have to look back at what took place just the other day at the United Nations Security Council. A Russia-proposed humanitarian ceasefire was vetoed by the Americans and their allies, the allies to the Israeli regime, which could have stopped a lot of the bloodshed. How alarming, how disappointing is it to see that a humanitarian ceasefire would be shot down at the United Nations Security Council?
Well, first things first, anything proposed by Russia is being shot down by America automatically, and unfortunately, that means there's no actual dialogue or discussion of these subjects taking place at the international level. America is 100% on the side of Israel in this conflict, and we know that this is related to the Israel lobby inside America, which is the single largest donor to not just the Democratic Party that's in power in the White House today, but to the Republican Party as well. So all the bases are covered over there. America is in lockstep with the lobby that finances its political system. That means the next government of America is primarily going to be decided by the finances coming from the Israel lobby inside America. So we cannot look to America for a neutral position. And that's why the UN exists. That's why international bodies exist. And that's why Russia is proposing to the international community, and not to Israel and not to America, that there be a ceasefire. Next, what we have to do now is take a perspective on this situation. 40 years ago, this kind of an attack by the Palestinian side on Israel that provoked Israel's overwhelming response was technically not possible. Now we have nuclear powers around the world, including North Korea, who are producing nuclear weapons. Nuclear weapons are soon going to be on the international arms market. The next level of this conflict is the use of low-yield nuclear weapons in the space known as Palestine or Israel. If that happens, Israel, the government of Israel, Netanyahu, and the military of Israel will no longer be able to justify this kind of action. And I wish somebody on the Israeli side would take note of the fact that this is a no-sum game if it proceeds the way it has been. This is going to be a terrible cataclysm. It is going to be the loss and killing of millions of people, including millions of Jews. This is going to be a second Holocaust, and it is going to be authored by the actions of Israel. And this is something that the Israeli government has to respond to internationally and to its own citizens. I'm actually looking for Jews inside Israel to insist on peace. Until that happens, we're going to see cataclysmic mass death, mass destruction, and potential Holocaust number two.
Fra Hughes, I want your opinion also on the recent United Nations Security Council session where the Russia-proposed humanitarian ceasefire was vetoed.
Well, personally, I no longer look to the UN. I haven't for a long time for any form of intervention anywhere in the world that is to the benefit of the people who are suffering from the oppressive imperialist machinations throughout the world. I'm not surprised by what's happened. We have seen, and it's almost pointless in a way saying it or restating it, but we have seen practically thousands of UN resolutions against Israel be vetoed by America, France, or Britain in the Security Council, and being voted down or voted against in the Assembly body itself. I think one of the dangers that maybe John has alluded to there about maybe a proliferation of nuclear armed contact. I've travelled quite a bit throughout the region. I've been in Beirut several times, and when I was in Beirut recently, I was talking to people about the explosion in the Beirut in the port of Beirut. And I mean, there are allegations that was a thermonuclear device that was exploded in Beirut, that it was nothing to do with the fireworks and it was nothing to do with the fertilizers that had been there for 10 or 15 or 20 years, but it was a battle-tested nuclear armament. And the fact that this cannot be said publicly is because of the reaction of the Lebanese people. I don't know if that's true, but if we assume for one second that it might be true, it shows that there are people in the region that have small tactical nuclear weapons who are prepared to use them. So if that's the case, that would be my concern going forward, that a country with between 200 to 400 nuclear devices that it does not publicly testify that it has. We don't know what else it has. We don't know what else it will use. If it can kill 500 people, mainly women and children in the hospital, and brag about that, I don't think that they would have any compunction not to use small tactical weapons in order not to protect themselves, but in order to inflict as much misery, pain, and death on anyone who would so much as throw a stone at a tank or raise a pen to write against the atrocities of the Israeli government, or indeed fire a rocket in support of the Palestinian people.
Just earlier, we had live images of the rally taking place outside the UN office in the Iranian capital, Tehran. We spoke to our correspondent earlier from the site of the rally. There also, Iranians have taken to the streets expressing their support for the Palestinian cause, expressing their support for Gazans and Palestinians in Gaza, and they're also calling for an immediate halt to the Israeli crimes committed against the Gazans. Also, all of this was fueled. All these pro-Palestinian and anti-Israeli demonstrations were fueled by the attack on the Al-Ahli Hospital in central Gaza on Tuesday, which resulted in the death of hundreds of people who were seeking refuge and seeking medical treatment at the hospital in Gaza. Also, we are showing you live images from the Gaza Strip, the Gaza skyline, which is indicating that the Israeli attacks are continuing against the Palestinians, the defenseless people in Gaza. John Bozich, the Russian foreign minister, just recently warned that there's a serious risk that the Gaza conflict will become regional. Will you break that down for us, please?
Not just in the Gaza Strip, but also in the other Palestinian enclaves across the territory of the State of Israel. I think we have a possibility of the activation of Hezbollah activists on the border of Israel. And I also think that there's a possibility for precision strikes by rockets and missiles on in response to Israel's attack on the Gaza Strip, and that these rocket strikes could be very well targeted on large concentrations of the Israeli population. The road forward, if it follows the current course, is a road of mass murder and mass killing, and it will involve both sides, and it will make Israel appear to be uninhabitable to many of the Jewish residents who are dual citizens. And as you've already mentioned in this program, many of them will abandon Israel and leave for other places. So we're looking at a disruption, a complete disruption of the Israeli economy. We're looking at a potential trade embargo that goes beyond anything that's been seen before. We're looking at a possible ongoing rocket conflict in which Israel has no targets that are not civilian enclosed, and the other side can pinpoint and hit Israeli points of military, political, and intelligence control. It is once again, a losing game for Israel. Israel should not have reacted the way that it has in the extreme sense that it has done. The Israeli forces do not show any signs of targeting Hamas. We have to remember that the Hamas organization is roughly, of its own declared membership, is roughly 1% of the population of the Gaza Strip. So the other 99% of the people being impacted, killed, massacred, injured, wounded, or displaced by the indiscriminate attack by Israel are being radicalized. And the support for Hamas, the membership in Hamas, will rise astronomically. We can look at them moving from 1% to 10% in very short order. That 10 times expansion of the personnel and capacities of Hamas is going to be a nightmare for Israel that they cannot live down and they cannot escape. This requires some level-headed, moderate, reasonable, democratic, future-oriented thinking that is absolutely not possible for Netanyahu. It is not within his tool chest. He does not have that ability. Since he does not have that ability, a third force has to emerge, and it will be a third force within Palestine, within the Israeli community, within the international Muslim and Jewish communities, and among Christians like myself, who cannot bear to watch this and cannot silently stand by as accomplices through our silence in the mass murder and in the preparation for Holocaust number two.
And one last question for Mr. Frahues before we wrap up this segment of the program, and that's the issue of accountability. There has to be accountability for these crimes. There has to be serious consequences for the killing of innocent women and children. the targeting of schools, targeting of hospitals, targeting of UN-run shelters. How can we ever see that accountability given the status quo, given the unequivocal support from the likes of the United States for the Israelis?
I would say good luck with that, because it's not going to happen anytime soon. If you look at the historical parallels, you'll see that no one was held responsible for the terrorism of the Stern gangs, the Haganah and the Lehi, who became future leaders of the IDF and future prime ministers of Israel. I think it's important that one of the things that we think about is how we can possibly help the people in Palestine on a practical level. And the only people who have held the Israelis, the Israeli government and the IDF to account are actually the Palestinian people themselves, by standing up in resistance to the continued illegal occupation of their land. And indeed, I would go so far as to say Israel itself has no right to exist, because it self-declared itself in 1947, 1948, before it was realized or recognized by the United Nations. It's a self-declared terrorist entity that has continued to terrorize its neighbors and its citizens from the day and hour that it was born in bloodshed on the 14th of May, 1948.
Same question to Mr. Bosnich as well. Mr. Bosnich, the issue of accountability, Mr. Frau-Hughes believes that we will not be seeing any form of accountability anytime soon. What are your thoughts on that issue? There has to be consequences for the Israeli crimes and for the manner and action that they've been conducting themselves over the years with regards to the Palestinians. How can that status quo ever change?
Well, unfortunately, the institutions of so-called law and justice have been perverted to such a degree that we have the president of Russia under a warrant from the so-called International Criminal Court, the court that the United States refuses to recognize, but which it uses as a tool against its opponents. So the rule of law has been undermined and destroyed. That's number one. Number two, we have the selfishness and self-centeredness, ultimate self-centeredness of the Israeli leadership, which bears no likeness to anything else we've seen in the world. It's a state which declares one class of citizens and officially has a system of apartheid long after South Africa has been destroyed as an apartheid center. And finally, we have the worst of all, the egotistical, selfish, and power-centric American ruling group, especially in the Democratic Party, which does not care how many people are killed by either side in Israel, so long as they can swing this to their advantage. Well, Biden has fumbled this ball as he's fumbled most balls during his presidency, and we're looking at a fall of the Democratic Party in the United States and the coming of President Trump back to power. And I think we're going to be surprised, even though President Trump is so, so vociferously pro-Israel, I think he'll be able to pull a rabbit out of the hat and offer Israel a solution that it simply cannot refuse.
So for those of you just joining us, the Israeli attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip continue. You can see the plumes of smoke rising through the skyline as the attacks are continuing unabated. This would be the 13th day, to be precise, as the attacks continue against the residential and critical infrastructure In the Palestinian coastal enclave. Many more Palestinians have fallen victim to the Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip as the regime presses ahead with its deadly onslaught against the besieged territory. Up until now, nearly 3,500 Palestinians, that's the official record. Our correspondent, who we were speaking to earlier, said that that number will definitely rise and is much more than the number of 3,500 Palestinians killed as a result of the indiscriminate bombing of the Israelis. At least 12,000 others have been wounded. Of the 3,500 officially announced as the fatalities and the death toll from the attacks, at least 1,000 of those have been children. And let's not forget what took place on Tuesday, the Israeli attack on a hospital in central Gaza. which left at least 500 people dead who were seeking refuge and seeking medical treatment at the hospital in central Gaza. And now we're seeing the live images of the Gaza skyline where the attacks on the besieged people of Gaza continues. So there we have it. The Israeli occupation is warning 24 hospitals, including the Al-Shifa hospital, that's the main hospital in Gaza.